Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com. Hello, and welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. I want to welcome you to episode 75 of the show. That's quite an accomplishment, I feel. I know that I've been podcasting way back since 2006, but episodes have been, you know, a little irregular. It's something I've talked about previously here on the show. So I want to thank everyone who's stuck around, people who've come in the beginning, those of you who are new friends to the show. I feel that over those many years that this show has grown and morphed into something better than it was when I began. And, it's been a learning progress for me, definitely a learning experience. So I am most grateful for all of you for sticking around for this, the 75th show. I want to let you know that this is going to be a jam-packed show. I have lots of things I want to talk to you about. I have a review for a book called Super Carrier that I'm going to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about some new equipment I have here in the studio, some new workflow kind of things that might be of interest to those of you who are into podcasting or into listening to podcasts or just people who like all sorts of gadgetry. I want to talk a little bit about with a review that I have for a new thing that I'm using actually for my workflow here on the podcast called Wunderlist. So I'll be reviewing that later on. I have a little bit of an update on Battle Games digital subscriptions. Then I also have the bulk of the show being devoted to a major announcement made by the people over at Battlefront, who are those who make Flames of War. It's a 15mm World War II game that's very popular all over the world. So I have their announcement I'm going to share, and then lots and lots of analysts and reactions and coverage and all that sort of stuff dealing with it. I don't want to give it away what the announcement is. Chances are you probably already know if you're into the historical gaming kind of hobby, but I'm just going to kind of leave it hanging there until I get to it. So let's start off with the little bit of announcement that I have pertaining to my equipment and everything. In the last episode, I announced that we were joining the Troll in the Corner podcast network, that I had a new microphone, and that things should be pretty cool, and hopefully you'd be hearing a better quality when you're listening to the show. I want to announce that I've also added to my equipment. Right now, I have my Blue Snowball microphone. I have my pop filter, which is really cool. It hooks onto it. But then I went ahead and I picked up a shock mount. Shock mount, you say? What is that? Well, a shock mount is really most effective, I guess, is what I'm thinking. Most effective for those who do music and that sort of stuff where you have lots of vibration. So if you have some vibration, the mic is coming in, the mic is going to vibrate, you're going to get some distortion of sound. The shock mount isolates the microphone to minimize that vibration. Now you're thinking, you're doing a podcast, you shouldn't have any vibration. And that's true, but if I'm like slamming on my desk or I pick up something, you know, from time to time, I happen to get a glass of water, and I'm just taking a sip of my water while I'm recording. You might be able to hear some slight noise distortion when I put the glass down. So this is going to eliminate all of that, and hopefully we will get a much better sounding audio for you. Now, one of the cool things about the shock mount, besides all that cool technical stuff, is that when you put the microphone in it, it looks like one of those old style, radio mics. If you've ever seen The King's Speech, which is a great movie, I highly recommend. But at the beginning of it, they have the BBC announcer, and he's there, and he has a mic in front of him. And, you know, it's kind of like one of those old-school mics, so it's really cool. Now, that is some new equipment that I am using. Of course, I do things the same old way as I've been doing for a long time. I record the show in Audacity, which is a free program anyone can get, whether you're on Windows or on Mac. Then I take my recording, I, you know, do some stuff to make it a little nicer and a little fancier. I take the MP3 format that I get, I put it into iTunes, and then I play around with things in GarageBand, lining up all the different audio tracks, making sure that, you know, you're going to listen to the intro music, you're going to listen to, you know, credits or whatever, you listen to the bulk of the show and promos and just whatever's going on, and that it all just kind of lines up just right. I export it all, I write up my show notes, and do all that stuff, and upload the episode, and then it comes live to you, and you get it probably on your feed. You might be a subscriber via iTunes, and you get it that way, or you listen on, you know, streaming or whatever. So none of that's ever changed. Just some new equipment that I got that I'm pretty excited about. Now, in addition to that, I want to talk, of course, about some other stuff. Let's get into Wunderlist, because Wunderlist, or Wunderlist, as you know, some of us Americans might pronounce it, is really cool for task management and workflow. You would find it at www.wunderlist.com, Wunderlist. And what it is, it's a free cross-platform piece of, it's a program, really. You can use it on the web, you can download it for an iOS device, you can download it for XP, or any sort of Windows platform, you can download it for iOS, you can download it for OS X, you can download it onto an Android, or Google phones, you can also put it onto Blackberries, and I believe they will have a version coming out for, you know, the two of you who might own a Windows phone, so you can get it onto all of those. And what it allows you to do is you can make different lists. You can assign priority to them by starring them. You can put a date on them for when it needs to be done by. And it puts the list in front of you. And you can have different lists. So you can have like a list, like a shopping list, for example. Be like, oh, I need these for, you know, whatever recipe. So you could then have another list that might happen to be a set of things that you need to do when you're at work or so forth. I happen to use it for two different things. I have one list that's named after whatever show I'm doing, because I do a few different shows, and they're kind of like long-term sort of goals or moderate range kind of action point items. So like, for example, one of the ones that I have here on Wargaming Recon is I want to schedule an interview with someone to hype up an upcoming convention. So that's not really, you know, right away, but it's kind of an ongoing project that I want to do. Now, I have a list for this recording I'm doing right now for episode 75, there's 20 items on that action list. And they're all kind of topics that I want to cover. They're, you know, URLs I want to go to or audio that I'm going to add in at some point. Just all that sort of stuff. It's things to help me remember what I want to talk about here on the show. Now, the cool thing about this is I can easily use this to go and write my show notes afterwards. So I, you know, get the show all recorded and everything, and I'm going into the blog over at wargamingforums.com. I'm like, oh, I got to come up with a title and do this, but what did I talk about? In the past, I would listen to the entire episode yet again to find out what I had talked about. You might think, you can't remember? Well, a lot of work goes into doing a podcast, whether it's 20 minutes or an hour or 5 hours. So when you're doing all that, you're not really paying attention to everything. Your only choices are to either go back and listen yet again to what you had talked about, which is what I normally would do. You could take notes, which is something else that I would do. In the past, I would have, you know, pen and paper or notebook here. And I would just kind of write down, oh, I talked about this and that and so forth. And oh, in this book, and I mentioned so-and-so. I got to make sure I give them a link to their blog and so forth. But now I can have all of this in my Wunderlist. I have it set up on my iPad, so I get the iPad right in front of me, underneath my computer screen, my iMac, so I can see this stuff, and then I can just noiselessly tap next to whatever's been done, and that gets put into my completed items, and it just works its way down. Like I said, this is 100% free. It syncs it across all your devices. You can download versions of the program for whatever sort of mobile devices you have, whether it's a smartphone or a tablet computer or your desktop computers. And it, you know, it just works. And did I mention it's free? It's really easy to use. It's a fun tutorial setup. So I am using it for all of my podcasts. I'm using it for Geeks Explicitly, Gamer Tunes, of course, Wargaming Recon. I'm also using it to cover whatever work I happen to do as an editor over at Troll in the Corner. And Geeks Explicitly, you know, I do with my buddy Drew McCarthy. So he and I have this list. I shared it with him so he can edit items on it. He can add items, delete things. So this way we just kind of keep a running tally of what we've worked on, what's done, what we need to do. So it's really cool. It's something you might want to think about. There's all sorts of different reasons why you could use it, different ways you could use this program. But it's two thumbs up from me here over at Wargaming Recon, and I hope you give it a try. Now, that said, I want to move on and talk about this update I have regarding the Battle Games Magazine digital subscriptions. You might recall that when Battle Games was bought out by the people over at Atlantic, they still continued, you know, both the paper and digital subscriptions, but digital wasn't really a subscription. You were kind of licensing the content for a temporary period. They put the content out through the Exact Editions Exactly app. The only ways you could access your digital quote-unquote subscription would be if you went to the Exact Editions website and you logged in with your username and password and you could use it there on their website. Or if you downloaded their app, I have the app for iPhone, for iPad, you know, it's on iOS devices. I think they also have it for Android, maybe BlackBerry. I'm not sure about BlackBerry, but, you know, they have it for other devices out there. And then you could use it that way, but you couldn't transfer the content to anywhere. You couldn't save it onto your computer or whatever. In the past, Battle Games Magazine always gave you your digital subscription as a PDF. They recognize that you are subscribing. You own the issues, right? So you get your own personal copy for it. You get to keep it. You don't need to use a special program to use it. You have the file. It's a PDF, which is universal. You could take it and put it in whatever program you like that you're going to read it. You could just read it on your computer. You could print it out if you wanted and carry it around that way. You could do whatever you wanted to within the realms of legality. But then when Atlantic came, that went away. Now, there was a huge uproar. I'm proud to say I was part of that. I've talked about that here on the show. I've talked about it on the blog, on Facebook, on Twitter, all over the place. I've talked about how I was opposed to what the people at Atlantic were doing with Battle Games' quote-unquote digital subscriptions. Now, I was not the only one. Many other people were opposed to it, and they were vocal about it. So Henry Hyde, the editor and former owner of Battle Games Magazine, went ahead and had a poll put up and sent the information on to Atlantic. The poll, from what I understand, showed overwhelmingly that those who have digital subscriptions want to own it. They want real subscriptions. They don't want to be licensing this stuff. So as of now, the latest news is that the people at Atlantic are aware of this and have passed on the information to their lawyers, where it's sitting and the lawyers are thinking about it. I can't speak for Battle Games, Atlantic, or any of those people over there. But my own inclination is that since it's in the hands of the lawyers and it's been there for a little while, that's not good news. And as a result of this, I will not be renewing my subscription to Battle Games Magazine. It pains me to say it because I think it's a quality magazine. I like its message. I think it is worth every penny that I spend on it. And I think that Henry Hyde, who is the editor, does a fantastic job with the magazine. Unfortunately, Atlantic Publishers, who are the new owners, just don't seem to get it. They are stuck and mired in the past, and they don't understand what a digital subscription really is. To them, subscription, quote-unquote, is really a license. And I don't want to license a magazine. I want to own it. Now, I can't afford to buy the physical copy to have a physical subscription to Battle Games. So that just means, I'm sorry, Atlantic, you lost a subscriber. Now, I'm not canceling my subscription. I'm just not going to renew it. And that's how it goes. Hopefully, the people at Atlantic and their lawyers will recognize what's going on and will then fix it. If they ever do, I will be the first to look into it and to think about resubscribing. Now, my hope is that if they do go ahead and use the method that Battle Games has always used in the past before Atlantic bought it, that they will make those issues from the time that Atlantic bought it to the time that they agree to use the just regular PDF format without this whole Exact Editions stuff, that they'll make those issues set up the other way and that they'll make them available to people who subscribed during that time period. It's a right thing to do, and it's the best thing to do. It's great customer service, and it's win-win for Atlantic. So here's hoping that Atlantic sees the light and that they go ahead and their lawyers allow them to move ahead and make Battle Games Magazine digital subscriptions the way that they once were. So, now that I've talked a little bit about those, I want to give you my review for this book. It's called Super Carrier, and it's written by Christopher Bennett. Now, when I say written, I don't want you to think there's lots of words in there, because there's really not. But what there are some fantastic pictures. So, Super Carrier, and I'm just going to kind of open it so you might hear a little bit. So, this book is you know, it's not a large book. It's not very big. It's not one of those coffee table books. But it is full of wonderful, full-color, glossy photographs. I had gotten this because it was mentioned in another book I had read. It was in, you know, their bibliography. And I was like, oh, you know, I want to work my way through the bibliography and see what other kind of books that are out there, other sources, and see what I think about them. So I finally got around and I requested it through my work, and I got this book. It's an older book. It's published in 1996. So, you know, some of the information is dated. But, like I said, the key for it is these full-color, glossy photographs. The book covers the USS George Washington, which is a Nimitz-class, you know, aircraft carrier. And it has pictures of the carrier, it has pictures of the crew, where they live, where they work, the planes. And it explains what life is like on a carrier. It covers, you know, what the different color shirts mean. It gives you technical information about the ship and about the planes. It covers the cost of what a carrier is to not only build, but to maintain. It's an air wing and all that sort of stuff. It's a very interesting book. I'm about like 80% through the book. I enjoy it, but I do realize it is a little out of date. If you're interested in it, it's good for background information. It's good if you're just kind of looking for an introductory to this sort of stuff. It's definitely not for the serious academic, the serious researcher, but it could help you to, you know, kind of expand your worldview, as it were. Now, I believe you can still purchase this. It's, you know, probably on Amazon. You can get it from your local library. At the time it came out, it retailed for $12.95, and I'll put the ISBN and the link up to it, you know, to worldcat.org, which is basically a free kind of library catalog that shows every library in the world that has it who have, you know, membership with WorldCat. So I will have that up, and you'll be able to go ahead and search by that. I think it was worth reading, but like I said, not the best book in the world, but definitely worth a gander. So here we are. I'm a little ahead of schedule, but that's okay. We are going to be getting into the bulk of the show, the Battlefront announcement. I teased you a little bit at the beginning of the show by saying that I was not going to tell you what the announcement was, but I did mention that it's huge, and it is. So here we go. Today, Battlefront, who are the makers of Flames of War, put up an announcement on their website, flamesofwar.com. I printed it out. I get the announcement right here. So I'm just going to read it to you. They have all sorts of different announcements on their website on the front page. And this one was kind of buried about halfway, three quarters of the way down of the new content. It was titled World Events Update. And you're going to think, what's an update on World Events going to do that's going to, you know, cause everyone to be talking about it? Is it good? Is it bad? I don't know. Well, you know, with a title like that, you think it's innocuous. I don't have to worry about it. Well, I would think twice. So they have this update, and they start up by saying, as this year's tournament season rapidly comes to a conclusion, we thought this would be an excellent time to share with you our plans for the next season. And then, you know, that paragraph goes on, a second paragraph goes on, and then a third paragraph goes on, a fourth, and then finally, in the fifth paragraph, which is the second to last of, you know, this update, they state, the final change we are making is that from the new season, all the events we run will be only allowing Battlefront miniatures to be used. This is bound to cause some debate, so let me be clear as to why we have chosen to go down this path. Joe, Gareth, and our events cost a great deal of money to run. A little over a quarter of a million American dollars this year alone. And although it seems childish to draw a line in the sand and say, quote, if you want to play at our events and support the foul hobby, you should not be bringing other people's models along, end quote, it is absolutely that simple. Our business is a business, and we want Flames of War to grow. We intend to give it the best support we can, but this support has a cost. And then after that, they have one other tiny paragraph, and they go ahead and they give a list of upcoming events. Like I said, this was posted Thursday, July 12, 2012, by Chris at Battlefront. And as you can guess, it has set the Flames of War and historical gaming community alight with conversation. All sorts of stuff going on by people who are just up in arms or in favor of this announcement. It's big news. Battlefront is a large, small company, but you know they're big fish in the pond that they're in. And to have them go ahead and say, okay, listen, buddy, you want to play in our events, you got to use our stuff. And if you don't use it, you can't play in our events. We're going to send you away. You're just not allowed. It reminds me of Games Workshop, and I know things are a little different, and we'll get into that, trust me. But it reminds me of Games Workshop when they came up with their policy that said, you want to play in a Games Workshop official event, tourney, whatever it is, Games Day and stuff, they can only be our models. They had exact rules that stipulated what percentage of your model, if it was scratch built or customized, converted or whatever, what percentage of it had to be composed of Games Workshop materials. You had to have something like 90-95% of the model had to be a Games Workshop model or things that they sold. I might be off a little bit about the percentage, so I'm sure someone who knows better will, you know, call in or leave me an email or whatever and correct me. And if I'm wrong, and I might be, but if I'm wrong, I want you to correct me. But overwhelmingly, they said it had to be a Games Workshop model. And if you didn't do any conversions, you didn't do any sort of scratch building or whatever, everything, 100%, had to be Games Workshop product. You couldn't use anything but any other manufacturer. You couldn't use anything that was not, you know, officially stamped GW on it, and that really clamped down for how things were done. So I definitely see this being similar to what the people at Battlefront are doing with Flames of War. Now you're thinking, well, you know, it's their game, it's their company, they can tell you what to do with it, how to use it. And, well, I want to disagree with you, but before I do, I want to give more of a balanced, you know, coverage for it, because I don't want to just be like, rah, 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 they're wrong, rah, 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 how dare they, etc., etc., because you know what? That's not going to get us anywhere. If they made the announcement, that's that, and now we have to deal with it and see what the fallout will be. And I'm going to have some coverage and reaction from other places that I will be sharing with you in this episode, where people take a stance one way or the other. So, you know, they made this announcement. Now, what's the good of it? The good means that you guaranteed that if you go to an official event, that people are going to be using Flames of War products that Battlefront has made. You're going to guarantee that you should be able to recognize what they are, so you don't have to worry about someone being like, oh, I bought this from another company, and it's supposed to be a Sherman, but, you know, it doesn't really look like a Sherman. You're going to know it's a Flames of War thing. It's going to look how they want their Shermans to look. You're going to be able to identify it easily on the table. I know that's what it is, and you'll be able to just see what's happening, and, you know, what you see is what you get. It's very WYSIWYG. You don't have to worry about trying to interpret what some other company did when they created a product. You're also going to know that Battlefront has this sphere of things, and that this should push them to make other products that they have yet to make. I know there are things in some of their lists that they don't have product for yet. They don't have models for yet. They have different things that are shown and says, oh, you know, for this army list, you need item A and item B and item C, but we don't make item C just yet. So people were going and buying product from other companies to get that item C. So now, I was about to call them Games Workshop. Now Battlefront really has to go ahead and make that item C and make it available. What's the actual impact of this? Well, if you're going to go and play in an official Battlefront event, you have to have 100% Battlefront models. If, you know, 9 out of 10 of your things are Battlefront, but that 10th one is not, you can't use that 10th one. How are they going to tell? Well, they have not said that. We don't know. Are they going to have some sort of judge who's going around? Let me see. Is that one of our models? Oh, let me take some paint off and scratch some of your paint off of your nicely painted model to see if it's ours. Or is it plastic? Let me feel the weight of it. Is it, I don't know, it doesn't look like one of ours. Or did you do something with it? Like, I don't know what they're going to do, but they will have to police it. They've been upfront about it, so they're not trying to be underhanded. I give them props for that. Part of this, at least part of what people are believing the cause of this is that Battlefront has come in, they've made Flames of War, and, you know, 15mm World War II gaming has been around for ages. It's not a new thing. Battlefront didn't invent it. They didn't come up with the idea and say, No one's ever done a 15mm scale before. No one's ever used that for World War II. Let's just go ahead and invent it and use it. They didn't do that. It already existed. But what they did do was they popularized it. They made it so that you could go just about anywhere in the world and get a game of Flames of War so you could then play your World War II gaming at that 15mm scale. They made models, they made rules, they made terrain and all sorts of stuff. They created this community where you could go and you could participate in the community, you could play in their events and in their games. You knew what you'd be getting when you went in. They were not surprises. But there really were, because maybe they didn't make a model that you needed, or maybe another company made the model and made it cheaper. Battlefront products are not cheap. They're not as expensive as Games Workshop products, and there are definitely other companies out there that make products that are a lot more. There's also companies that make products that are a lot less. For example, people have been going to the Plastic Soldier Company and Zvezda and other places, and they've been getting, you know, some of their models that they've been using in Flames of War. They go into official tournaments, and they just have all this sort of stuff. And they've been using it, but now they can't. And I think that part of this happens to be because that Battlefront has realized that although they popularized this, that other companies that existed before Battlefront and companies that are new, that they're cashing in and that they're eating up some of the market share, so that Battlefront is losing, you know, inch by inch, foot by foot, they're losing ground to these other companies, and that they want to maintain some source of income. They want to be able to be up to that high level, and so they could either, you know, retool everything and come up with a new manufacturing way and new design setup and everything, new pricing structure to be more competitive with these other companies, or the easier way would be to say, you know what, you have to use our stuff. You can't play with anybody else's stuff. You can only play with our stuff. And that's exactly what they did. Now, is that good or is that bad? That's really up for you to decide. And I can't stress enough that this ruling only applies, this announcement only applies to official Flames of War events that are run by Battlefront. If your local hobby store is running an event, your gaming group's running an event, you don't have to abide by this. But, and this is a caveat, since Battlefront has made this ruling, will the local communities adopt it? Will your local gaming club adopt it? Will friendly local game stores say, well, Battlefront did it, let's adopt it? Now, going with Games Workshop, they had the same situation. They made their announcement, and the local communities had to adapt, and the game stores had to adapt. And what happened was that there was a lot of independent tournaments, a lot of independent events being run by the clubs, by the stores, and so that they did not have to adhere to the ruling to use only Games Workshop products. Now, Games Workshop, you know, of course, played around with things and made it more difficult, and there was that whole give and take. They've gone back and forth with things. So that very well could happen with Battlefront. Now, long term, what's going to happen here? Battlefront claims that only 10% of their customers are tournament players, people who they believe this will directly impact, that the remaining 90% of customers are those who play casually, those who won't be playing in official Battlefront events, people who are playing in their homes, playing at work, playing at the local game stores, playing Winter Club, you know, just playing casually, and that those people are not bound by this ruling, that, you know, if you're one of those people, you can go ahead and you can get a Zvezda tank or whatever you want to do, and go ahead and use that, and it's not a problem. So they're figuring the impact will be minimal. They also believe that most of that 10% of tournament gamer, that most of those people already have almost all of their models as Battlefront. They figure that, you know, the 10%, say 90-100% of the collection that those people have, it's Battlefront anyway, so it's not going to really impact them. And that the stuff that they don't have as being Battlefront product, that they can easily get it. Now, I don't know if this is completely true. I don't know if their numbers are true. I don't really know where they're getting their numbers from. They did not announce that. They did, you know, give these numbers on their forums. There's been a big backlash on there, a huge backlash on TMP and other places. but they didn't really get into, oh, you know, we got this 90-10% split thing, and this is how we got it, and this is how we read by it. They didn't explain it. They just gave the information. So it's, we don't know. We don't know. It's really what it is. We just don't know. Now, I can tell you, the folks over at WWPD, News from the Front, which is formerly called What Would Patton Do? It's a hugely successful podcast, hugely successful Flames of War podcast that the head honcho over there, Stephen McLaughlin, was talking about things over on their forums. And they have a bunch of forums set up where people would go ahead and they can just talk about stuff. And I'm just going to go ahead and I'm opening up actually their website because I want to pull up and just read you some of the comments that they have there. Because Steven is a tournament player. The people at WWPD are tournament gamers. They go to independent tournaments. They play in nationals and all that sort of stuff. So they do all those sort of things. So this ruling does impact them. It definitely impacts them. And Steven had mentioned with his early war army that not all of it is Battlefront, partly because when he got into it, and he got into it in a huge way, that when he got into it, that Battlefront didn't make all of the models that he needed. So he had to go to other companies, and now he can't play with those armies and nationals or other official events. You know, he spent big bucks on it, and he's not the only one. Other people would have done that, and it makes it really hard for them to be getting into some of these events. Now, he has gone ahead, and I'm just going to quote Steven. And Steven, if you're listening, I hope it's okay. You posted it on your forum, which is a public entity, so I hope you don't mind that I mention what one of your thoughts was about this. Steven says, I guess I am just really disappointed. I can at least understand the reasoning for the decision, though I question the correctness of it. So I am doing my best not to let my blood boil. But this news means I can't participate in any official early war tournaments. I bought into early war in a big way, spent a ton of money on stuff, but some of my essentials were necessarily other manufacturers because Battlefront stuff was not available for a while after Blitzkrieg. So early war is essentially off the table for me now, and I was one of the few proponents of it around here. Soviets are also off the table, though 70% of my Soviets are Battlefront. The others I just will not replace only to play in tournaments. I went with other manufacturers in the past specifically because it was allowed. To change now means everyone who bought from other manufacturers with Battlefront's blessing are now left with money spent on figures they can't bring to tournaments. So I guess it just means official tournaments are far less attractive to me now. I hope I-95 keep running their quality events where I know this rule will not be enforced. I hope others follow suit. I hope the undoing of a lot of goodwill from the company is worth it to Battlefront in the long run. I do enjoy the quality events, but I'll be necessarily attending less of them now, which is a real bummer. And I think Steven's, you know, statements there kind of epitomize what a lot of people are feeling, that they realize and they want Battlefront to be competitive. They don't want Flames of War to go away. These people like the game. They like to play it. They like the people they play with. And whether they're a tournament player, they're a casual player, whatever, they enjoy it. But they realize that although the actual impact may be small, and if Battlefront's numbers are correct, that only 10% of their customer base are tourney players, that only that small percentage, 1 in 10, you know, will be impacted by this decision, that the media play of the PR aspect of it is awful. It just destroys all sorts of goodwill because Battlefront had for a long time said, you know what, it's okay, use other people's stuff. We're not doing that. You know, we're not like the other guy, the other company who does that. We want you to use this other stuff. And that reminds me of a company named Privateer Press who once upon a time said, you know what, we don't have plastic models. We won't make plastic models because metal is better. You get better quality with metal, better detail. Unlike another company, aka Games Workshop, who gives in for the plastic, we're not doing that. And then what did Privateer Press do eventually? They have a bunch of their models as plastic. So they gave in too. They switched their methods up. And Battlefront's doing it too. They're not saying all plastic is bad, but what they're saying is, whoa, you can't use other companies' stuff now. And maybe the reason is justified. Maybe it is. But anyone who goes ahead in an official company announcement, anyone who goes ahead in that announcement and basically says that the customers owe it to the company to do this is just, well, you're full of yourself. I have other things I want to say, but this is a family-friendly podcast where I swear in some of my other podcasts, but I'm not swearing in this. But you know what? It's so absurd. It really is a PR nightmare. And I don't think Battlefront understands right away what kind of, you know, crap they're doing to themselves. They're just making things worse with this. Now, I hope that what will happen is that the people at Battlefront will realize that this is a bad idea and will back off from it. I hope they wake up and smell the coffee, because it is a PR nightmare. So you're thinking, okay, you've been talking about it being a PR nightmare, and you said before that you're going to talk about some other coverage and some other reactions. Well, you're right, I am. I want to give you a reaction from a local store owner who runs, or used to anyway, a lot of Flames of War events. He has a store. It's called Adler Hobby. It's up in Hollis, New Hampshire. You can find it at www.adlerhobby.com. His name is Gordon. Gordon, I hope you're listening to the show. I know you listen sometimes. Gordon runs lots of events. He's run tournaments at local conventions. He has a huge presence up at HuzzahCon up in Maine, which is a great historical convention. He's had a presence in the past at TotalCon. Tons of events being run up at his store, Adler Hobby, up in Hollis, New Hampshire. Big proponent of Flames of War. Lots of stocking. Lots of stock for Flames of War stuff up there. Just tons of it around. But Gordon is not happy about this. And Gordon gave me his thoughts about it. He sent me an email, which he's allowing me to quote. And I'm going to just kind of censor one part of it, because it's we're a family-friendly show, Gordon. But Gordon says there's been a steady stream of 40K creep with their, meaning Battlefront's, policy, as they have more than a few Games Workshop employees now. And at their events, buying is down as well, as folks showing up at events. Historicon canceled a Flames of War game that the I-95 group was holding due to not having enough entries. The World War II genre gaming is in a temporary slump. Folks are moving on to other games and other historical eras to game. It is a natural cycle, and if Battlefront wants to make it harder to have fun with their game, they could lose folks on a more permanent basis rather than a temporary one. Their recent policy requiring retailers to submit a full inventory to get prize support is not helping promote in-store events. What store owner wants to do an inventory for every event? Not many. If they chose to cut back, fine, but to impose unnecessary work on the grunts in the trenches is just being a bleep. That's a Deadwood reference. And please quote me. Sorry, Gordon, I just can't. I put the bleep in, but I can't quote it. Gordon goes on to say, I'm asking my fan base to take a break and try other genre of gaming with the intent to jump back into Flames of War or other World War II gaming at a later time. A subtle boycott might do us all some good and give us all some time to reflect why we come to the table in the first place. The fans don't come to the table for models used or prize support anyway, and we sure can carry on without Battlefront's big brother policies. I want to thank you, Gordon, for your thoughts and your comments on what's going on up here. I know you've been a big proponent of Battlefront and Flames of War for a long time, and I'm sure it stings that Battlefront is doing this. I know it stings me, and I haven't played Flames of War in a long time, but I got into Flames of War with first edition way back in the day, and I was afraid that they were going to be doing stuff like this. It really kind of comes down to two different methodologies. You have this whole old school gaming and new school gaming, and I know you hear this a lot, and you're probably thinking, not that again, old school versus new school, enough already. But what I think is that historical gaming is really hard for people to break into. It was very difficult for me when I started with Black Powder because there were so many options to go to for models. I knew the rules I wanted to do, but they didn't have Black Powder models. I was used to this whole GW metric where it's an all-in-one kind of community. You get the rules, you get the models, you get the terrain, you get your supplies to you know, make your models, to paint your terrain. You get everything. It's all inclusive. You can get a starter box and it has all sorts of stuff in it. It just kind of gets you into the game. But historical gaming, by and large, doesn't have that. Historical gaming is very old school. You can make up your rules. You can just kind of, you know, do what you need. You can scratch build stuff or whatever. It's very, like, do-it-yourself. It's almost like maker movement for those of you who are into that sort of stuff. But at the same time, since it is so difficult, we're always talking about growing the hobby and the graying of the hobby, how there's all these, you know, long beards who are going around and people are dying off and that there's not enough new people coming into the hobby to play. The hobby is wargaming. The hobby is gaming, tabletop gaming, miniatures gaming. The hobby is not Flames of War. The hobby is not Games Workshop. The hobby is wargaming. The hobby is gaming. You need to make a difference there. You need to understand the subtle and not so subtle differences involved in what the word hobby means and what a game is. With this, people are just having a hard time getting into this stuff. They're thinking, you know, I can't get into this. I can't get into the hobby because I don't know where to start. I don't know what to do. So a company like Battlefront, who has this almost all-inclusive kind of thing going on, are doing a very new school method. They're thinking, let's make it easy for people. Let's put everything together, everything you need. It's in one location, you get it, and you're all set. It's kind of like how Apple does for computers and technology. You live in the Apple universe. You get your Apple computer, you get your Apple phone, your Apple tablet computer, you get your Apple whatever, your other devices you need, and they just, it just works. You know why? Because it's a closed loop. It's designed to work together, and they don't need to worry about unforeseen circumstances. It's very much what GW does because they have their closed loop, and it's what Battlefront's doing now. Closed loop. Use our stuff at our events, and you're all set. You get our rules, our models. They sell terrain. They got it all now. They're making it all. You need it for Flames of War, you got it, or they will be giving it to you. And by giving, I mean you're paying a premium because they are not going to give away anything. But it's all in this closed loop, this universe. You're living in this bubble where it's all happening. So that is very new school. And I think you kind of have this tug going on, this tug of war. People are pulling and yanking and, you know, you're pulling apart and trying to see, oh, is it new school? Is it old school? Am I getting everything I need? Am I having to come up with everything? I think there's a happy medium in there. I really do. I don't think you have to be new school or old school. Why not blend some of the two? Now, I think Battlefront's gone a little too far with their announcement here. I really do. And I understand some of the motivation behind it. And I think some of the people who've been calling them all sorts of names need to think twice about it. We're not trying to vilify them. I don't think they made this announcement. I don't think they made this ruling because they dislike us. They hate their customers. They hate gamers. They hate the hobby of wargaming. I don't think that's the case because it's clear by looking at their product, no matter what the problems are with it, and there are problems with their product, but it's clear by looking at it that they care about it, that they care about gaming, they care about history. Because if they didn't, why pick World War II? Why pick 15mm? Why pick tabletop gaming? It just doesn't make sense. The easiest thing to do would be to become a video game company or something, because World War II video games are very popular, and they could make lots of money at it. Instead of making, you know, a tabletop game, a miniatures game, where you're going to struggle to try to make some sort of money. It's an uphill battle from day one to day nil, to the very end of end times. It's an uphill battle. The only reason you do something like that is because you love it. It's a passion, and we got to remember that as messed up as I think Battlefront's decision is, that they're doing it from a place of good, and they come across really arrogant. I'm not going to deny that. They basically say, you owe us. And, you know, in the announcement, they use the word childish. And although it seems childish to draw a line in the sand and say, if you want to play at our events and support the foul hobby, you should not be bringing other people's models along. Those emphases are mine and mine alone. Battlefront did not put those in there, except foul is in caps, but that's because, you know, it's an acronym and not because they were like, foul. Foul, foul, foul. It's not that at all. It's just because it's an acronym and that's how it goes. But a lot of people over at the miniatures page have been going crazy about this. The reaction at the Flames War forums are off the chart. Like, I'm not even going to read any of those because most of them are bad. Some of them are good. generally, I find that the reactions on those two places are kind of going into one of two camps. You have the people who are saying, how dare they? It's our stuff, and we get to use it how we want to, and I'm going to boycott and never play Flames of War again, and rah, rah, rah. And then you get the people who are the Flames of War Battlefront brown noses who just, you know, Battlefront could go and give them a piece of chalk and make them eat it, and they would like it. And you get those two extremes, and there's not a whole lot in the middle right now, but I think as the days and weeks go by and things are clarified, that you're going to kind of get more of moderation of things. It's going to even out a little bit. But there are some big questions involved, too, because Battlefront needs to clarify how they're going to police this. And I use the word police on purpose. How will they police it? Are they going to have some sort of judge there? And how is the judge going to determine whether it's a Battlefront model or not? Look alone, because you can convert a Battlefront model. To my knowledge, that's not, you know, unacceptable. They're not saying, you bought this Battlefront model for $14 and you can't use it because you made it look differently. So you could have got another company's model and it could look like it was a converted Battlefront maybe. So how are they going to determine? Like, really, are they going to start scratching paint off or removing paint from your models to see is it a Battlefront model? Are they just going to kind of hold it and see, is that heavy or light? Is it plastic or resin? I don't know. Are they going to ask you? And, like, are they expecting honesty? And I don't think people should be lying to them about it. As bad as I think this policy is, I don't think if, you know, one of the Battlefront organizers comes up and says, hey, pal, I see you got an army there. I'm not sure. Are all of those Battlefront models? You shouldn't say no if you know, you shouldn't lie about it. Don't lie, because lying's bad. But, like, what are they going to do? How are they going to police this? And is this going to trickle down to other events? Is it going to trickle down to game stores, your local friendly game stores? Is it going to trickle down to the game clubs? Will they start adopting it? Are they going to move away from Battlefront because of this? Answer, I don't know. Now, I have some other reactions that I want to get into for this because, well, because it's interesting. I spent some decent time kind of looking at this, and I'm sorry if you heard some of that click-clack. I'm just pulling up some of my comments that I want to read for you. So I have one here, and the person who made this comment asked to be anonymous. So I am referring to them as a senior staffer at a well-known Wargames magazine. So this senior staffer at a well-known Wargames magazine says, I'd say that a number of 15mm ranges are very similar in size and style, something which a recent comparison in a magazine showed. It could be, I suppose, be done by the heft of the model to see if it was plastic, or perhaps by scraping the paint off. It is a backward move, in my opinion. When Games Workshop did a similar move, I know of several people who delighted in sneaking in non-canon miniatures into their armies. They were never found out. I'd like someone with an old Battlefront army to turn up and see if their army was still valid to play with. So that is, you know, a quote, an opinion and comments, as I said, from a senior staffer from a well-known Wargames magazine. I also have comments from Henry Hyde, over editor of Battle Games magazine. He's talked about this a little bit because, well, he's passionate about wargaming. Wargaming is a hobby. He's very passionate about it, and he posted up that, you know, a link to their announcement and everything. 43 comments on his thing online. He's had tons of comments about it, and he has quite a lengthy remark, and I'm going to go ahead and read all of it for you. You know, I know this is a long episode, and I say that episodes are about an hour. We're really getting there. And I'm almost halfway done with what I want to talk about. But I feel this is worth spending time on because it's important. And I know I'm focusing on the Battlefront announcement in particular. But really, this is a much bigger issue than that. I know other shows out there, other podcasts are going to cover it. WWPD will. I know Meeples and Miniatures will. I'm sure the Battlefront you know, official podcast will cover it. Other gaming podcasts are going to do the whole bigger issue. And I've just kind of touched on it a little bit. But I do want to spend some time going over these specifics with you. So, Henry Hyde, editor of Battle Games Magazine, says, quote, at what point would they have us start defining something as a hobby, when in fact it is just a set of rules and some associated products? This is something that has always troubled me about Games Workshop. There seems to be an expectation that we will suddenly take a magic pill that forces us to imagine the Emperor's new clothes are real. Wikipedia's definition: a hobby is a regular activity or interest that is undertaken for pleasure, typically done during one's leisure time. Examples of hobbies include collecting, creative and artistic pursuits, making, tinkering, sports, and adult education. Henry says, I like tinkering. So, by the Battlefront Games Workshop definition, every time we try a new rule set or use someone's product, we are engaging in a completely new hobby, rather than just a subset of what I always thought was my hobby, wargaming. Whilst certain manufacturers might like the idea, I'm afraid I start to find it all a bit tiresome and intellectually bankrupt. Well, I'm off to indulge in the Spencer Smith hobby, or should that be the black powder hobby, or even my own shot steel and stone hobby. Perhaps it's time to revert to just calling it playing with toy soldiers. Henry, I agree with you. I really do, and I appreciate that you allowed me to use your comments. And since I have comments that I'm sharing from magazine editors, I have some comments from Jasper Orthiz, who's the head honcho, the editor-in-chief of Wargame Soldiers and Strategy, and also the Ancient Warfare podcast. He's on the podcast too, but the Ancient Warfare magazine. So Jasper goes ahead and says, regarding this, that it seems to me it's a measure with relatively limited practical effect. As far as I know, there are relatively few official Battlefront tournaments, though the, quote, area of effect, end quote, could be increased, but with a potential larger PR fallout. You'd have to lurk on the Battlefront, e.g. WWPD forum for that. On the other hand, there are always a dozen of declarations to vote with their wallet from On the other hand, there are always dozens of declarations to vote with their wallet from people on forums when GW did something they didn't like, and the relative truth of that generally appeared soon enough. And as I said before, it's early days. This is based on two sentences and assumptions, mostly from people who don't or haven't played or played Flames of War. Jasper. So I want to thank you, Jasper, for giving me your comments as well. And I want to give a big thank you to Neil Shook of Meeples and Miniatures, because he's the one who alerted me to this. He has coverage on the Meeples and Miniatures blog, which I'll have a link to, of course, in the show notes, where his analysis is kind of given on this. But basically, we're all saying the same thing now. It's really what it is. But he was the first one to clue me into it. And of course, this, you know, came out on the Flames of War website, and then it went up on the Flames of War message board, on the internet forums. It was talked about there and stuff. But the way I heard about it was by Neil Shook's article, Battlefront Miniatures Rebrand World War II. And he has this article up where he quotes that thing. And I'm just going to quote a little bit of Neil, of your article here. I hope you don't mind me just quoting a little bit. Of course, we'll have a link to the article, but he says, this does not seem to be going down well. This thread on the managers page is a typical example. He says that he's not registered on the Flames of War forums, so he can't see the comments being made there, but on other forums, it would appear that Battlefront is making various statements to justify this change, but it does seem to be something of a U-turn from their previous position. It is amazing what quotes from forums can come back to haunt you at times. He says, to make no mistake, this is exactly what they are doing. They are trying to protect their brand. The Battlefront has become big fish in a relatively small pond. They can't claim to have invented 15mm scale World War II gaming, which is true, but it is true that they have done a lot to make the scale popular due to the huge popularity of the Flames of War rule set. He thinks, however, they are now finding that their market share is being put under pressure. He believes it's due to the dual effect of their own pricing strategy and growth of other companies' ranges making scales at 15mm, such as the Plastic Soldier Company, as I said, Forge and Battle, Peter Pig, Skytrex, Vesda, etc., etc. And he goes on and talks some more about all this stuff. If you want to read all of it, I'm not going to quote all of it, but if you want to read all of it, we'll have a link to the show notes. It's over at the Meeples and Miniatures blog, which is meeples.wordpress.com. Head on over to there, and you'll be able to see it and his thoughts about it. He has some great coverage. And, of course, the Meeples Miniatures podcast will be covering it when they have the new episode out. Now, I want to close things up here with discussion on Battlefront with two voicemails that I received. I have this really cool feature on the blog, wargamingforums.com, where you can leave me a voicemail. It doesn't cost you anything. There's no long-distance phone calls. It's 100% free. All you need is your computer and a microphone. So I have this cool service. It's called SpeakPipe, and you can leave a voicemail for free. And basically what you do, you go to wargamingforums.com, and there's a thing over on the right side of the page. It says Send Voicemail. It's kind of like this tab that's kind of, you know, sideways and stuff, and has a picture of a microphone. You click on that, and when you do, you get this little pop-up window, and it says, send a voice message. We'd love to hear from you. Please record your message. And then you can click on a green button and it says, start recording. So one of my gaming buddies, Adrian Benson, went ahead and he left me a message, which you will be hearing shortly. I just want to give you a cue up for it. So he left me a voicemail message on this. And I would encourage you, if you have comments that you want to share, you know, you might not feel like you're, you know, typing me an email or tweeting me or whatever, but you might feel that you want to go ahead and leave a vocal comment. Please leave a voicemail. It's really easy to do. It doesn't cost you anything. Like I said, all you need is a microphone and you need a computer. So if you're listening to this episode, you probably have a computer and you probably have a microphone in there, because a lot of computers come with them nowadays. I believe all the Macs do, all the iMacs do anyway. They come with their own webcam and an onboard mic. And I think Windows machines might. I'm not 100% positive about that. But I know the Macs do, so chances are you have a mic and you can just leave me a voicemail. I would be very delighted to listen to it. And you might appear in an upcoming, you know, episode of the podcast. Now, in addition to Adrian's comments, I'm also going to be playing a voicemail for you from Adam C. Adam is the owner of Fencing Frog. It's a fantastic gaming blog over at fencingfrog.blogspot.com. He also has coverage up there for his thoughts on the whole situation with Battlefront. He plays Flames of War. He's a current player. He's a casual gamer. You know, he's into it. I met Adam and had a great time meeting him up at Huzzah, and I kind of got to know him a little bit through the New England Black Powder, you know, email list that's set up for those of us who are into the Black Powder era and the Black Powder quote-unquote rules. Like, you know, I hate to call it a rule set. It's really guidelines for gentlemanly wargaming is what it is in the Black Powder era. It's not a rule book per se. I just hate calling it a rule book because it's not. But I've talked about that before and I don't want to get into it now. But I've gotten to know him from that. He has quite a way with words. He's very eloquent and he has his thoughts about it. So I will be sharing both Adrian's and Adam's comments about the situation and their, you know, response and reaction to it. So you'll be listening to that at the end of the show. But before I do, I do just want to let you know that, of course, you can find us here at wargamingforums.com. That, of course, we're also on the Troll in the Corner podcast network, which you can go to at trollitc.com. And then I just want to mention that we are now on Stitcher Radio. And you're thinking, Stitcher Radio? Stitcher Radio is this really cool free service. You can find it over at stitcher.com, S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R. You can get a free account, and you can listen to radio, you can listen to podcasts, listen to them on your computer. You can download the app for iOS devices like the iPhone, the iPad, iTouch, Android phones, you know, the Google phones, all that kind of stuff. You can download the app for that. It's 100% free, and it has all sorts of different podcasts on there and different sorts of stuff. It's a way to easily listen to podcasts. Not everyone's on iTunes. Not everyone likes to subscribe that way. This is just another way you can listen to us here on the show. I have to give a big thank you to Ben Gerber, the head honcho of Troll ITC, because I had suggested Stitcher to him. He liked the idea. He ran with it. He got the whole Troll in the Corner podcast network set up on Stitcher. So you'll be able to listen to things like his show Indie Talks. You'll be able to listen to me here on all my other shows, and you'll be able to listen to Brett Newhall's show, and we're all in Stitcher, so be sure to check us out. And I'm going to be going ahead and playing those voicemails for you now, and then after the voicemails, of course, you'll be getting our usual credits and all that kind of stuff, which I have updated because I have, you know, the whole lineup for TCPN, the Troll in the Corner podcast network. I have a new kind of closing credits for us to include Stitcher, and just all that sort of stuff. So that'll be at the end of the show. But really, this is it. I enjoy talking to you about this. I've been looking forward to recording this episode all day. I know it's been a while since I put an episode out. And really, the reason for that has been because I didn't have anything in mind for it. I haven't been doing a lot of gaming lately. And that's bad for when you got to record a podcast and you're thinking, what am I going to talk about? I don't have anything. And, you know, I should have just put something together. You know, anything. I should have just came up with something and gave it to you. But you deserve better than that. I get new equipment. I'm trying to give you better quality stuff. You've been sticking around. This is the 75th episode. Can you believe that? 75. That's huge. I never imagined that back in 2006 when I started doing this as a project for, you know, an online course I was taking. I never imagined that I would have 75 episodes put out. 75 episodes of this hour-long podcast. I'm just really appreciative that you guys, you know, let me into your lives and let you listen to me. You spend an hour, however long an episode is, spend that time listening to me, hearing what I think about stuff, and that, you know, you guys keep on coming back. You keep on downloading episodes, you listen to it streaming, you subscribe or whatever. You're just here, and you've kind of been listening to me as I've grown, as this podcast has grown. I really appreciate it. I am very thankful. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and play those voicemails for you so you can get the thoughts from Adam and Adrian, and those will be the last kind of bits of audio that you hear in the episode proper before we get into all that administrative stuff about, you know, Creative Commons and credits and all this sort of stuff and everything. But I just want to say a big thank you. I love getting feedback from you guys. Please, please, please send me feedback. I love your feedback. I live for it. You know, you can, of course, reach me by email. Send an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. You can find me on the web at wargamingforums.com. Leave a comment on the blog. I'm also over at trollitc.com. I post the show notes up there as well, so you can leave a comment over at trollitc. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Stitcher now. You know, we're all over the place. And, of course, I want you to try out the new way to leave a voicemail. It's SpeakPipe. It's free. It's easy. I'll have a link in the show notes. But basically, go to wargamingforums.com. It's on the right side. It has that little thing. You just click on the bar and then you click on record. All you need is a microphone and a computer. Very easy. So thank you. And, you know, I'll be getting to work on Wargaming Recon episode 76 to be getting that out to you as soon as I come up with an idea. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy these thoughts from Adam and Adrian about the situation with Battlefront Miniatures.
Hey, John, it's Adrian. Just following up on my my promise to record a voicemail for the for your podcast regarding the Flames of War, and only authorized Battlefront minis will be allowed in Flames of War tournament from here going forward. I just don't understand the logic behind the decision myself. I don't think it's going to hurt them in the long term, because unless the bulk of their player base is tournament players who use miniatures from other manufacturers than Battlefront, it's not really going to affect anyone. Casual players aren't going to care what the ruling is one way or the other. There's no rules there. They're going to play what they want to play. But from a goodwill or political perspective, it doesn't seem like it's a great idea. I mean, what's the point? I mean, are they unhappy that somebody may use models from some other 15mm manufacturer, Peter Pig or whoever, and it's really cutting into their bottom line that much? I can't really believe that it is, because if you buy one platoon of any kind of infantry or vehicles from Battlefront, I mean... I don't know what their profit margin is, but I know you could get three platoons from Peter Pig or one of the other manufacturers, so I don't think they're losing all that much money on it. But apparently it irritates them just to see other minis in their own at the tournament. So I sort of wonder if pretty soon there's going to be, you know, if you're putting on a tournament, not only do you have to use Battlefront authorized miniatures, but you also have to use Battlefront authorized terrain, because we know that they produce a lot of actually very nice terrain pieces through Gale Force 9, so I wonder how far they're eventually going to take it. It's an irritating thing to me. I mean, I'm basically done with Flames of War at this point anyway, so I can't say that I have a horse in the race. I know that I've bought miniatures from Battlefront, tons of them, actually, and have had frequent quality control issues with them. The last pack of miniatures I bought from them was the Sherman Armored Platoon, And I had to do serious carving on the resin hulls of those things just to get the tracks even to mount properly. There were huge globs of resin in the creases between the fenders and the bottom part of the hull on the resin hulls. And, I mean, that was an extreme case, but it's not unusual for Battlefront miniatures to look like that. I won't buy miniatures from them anymore. I'll also never play in a Flames of War tournament again, so that doesn't matter. But my point is that I can see why plenty of people might be interested in other manufacturers than Battlefront, between the quality control issues that I've experienced and the cost, because they're very much at the high end of the price range. This isn't a huge surprise to me, and I don't think it is to anyone else that they're doing this, because Battlefront with Flames of War, they've been going the way of Games Workshop for quite some time now, and it was just a matter of time. I mean, it's if you're honest about it, Flames of War is essentially 40K set in World War II. I mean, obviously the rules are a bit different, but between buying the modules and you're only allowed to field a list that's an official, quote-unquote official list out of one of the books that you also have to buy for anywhere from $30 to $50, it's enough is enough. So I'm going to personally look at another set of rules. I've actually already picked up Blitzkrieg Commander 2, which is a great set of platoon-level rules for World War II combat. And I think that probably I'm going to stick with that for now. And as far as I know, the guys that wrote Blitzkrieg Commander don't care whose miniatures I use, whether it's Battlefronts or GHQs or whoever's. So that's just kind of my take on it. Battlefront can do what they want. I think they're kind of making a mistake here, although I don't think it's going to hurt them all that much with their serious fan base. But as I said, I'm basically done with Flames of War myself anyway, so... And this is just one more reason why I can't tolerate the GW attitude that they sort of seem like they have now. But it is their game, it's their gig, and they certainly are free to do what they want. But so am I, and everybody, so is everyone else that has a problem with it. Anyway, take care, and I'll talk to you later.
Hey, Jonathan, this is Adam calling in for the podcast. I have to say I'm fairly stunned by what Battlefront did. I think they've sacrificed a great deal of goodwill for very little real gain. This really doesn't affect me directly. Most of what I own is Battlefront. Most of the games I play in are private, quiet pickup games. So I'm not a big tournament participator, but still, this saddens me because of the way it affects the gaming environment. Anytime we try and exclude somebody because of the models he particularly has, I think it's a net loss for all of us. And I think this is a very short-sighted move on their part. Hopefully they'll wake up and realize it, and if not, well, we'll find other games. We'll find other companies. There are alternatives. And, the bottom line is you got to make something people want to play. They do make something people want to play. But if we're going to say, nope, you can't participate because someone happens to have an old collection of tanks or infantry, and we have to say, no, you got to buy something completely new in order to play our game, it just doesn't seem right to me. For more on my thoughts, people can go to my blog, Fencing Frog, at Blogspot, and I look forward to hearing your comments. Bye!
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. If you enjoy Wargaming Recon, you might enjoy some of the other shows on the network. So here's the lineup. Every Wednesday is a new episode of Indie Talks with Ben Gerber. Ben is the owner of Troll ITC, and on Indie Talks, he covers independent games, movies, television. He performs interviews with guests, gives reviews, and much more. He claims it's a bi-monthly podcast, but actually, you can get a new episode every Wednesday. Geeks Explicitly is a show I co-host with my buddy Drew McCarthy. We release new episodes every Thursday covering all aspects of geek life. Look for reviews, interviews, and much more. Of course, Wargaming Recon is a bi-monthly historical and New England gaming podcast featuring interviews, reviews, convention coverage, giveaways, and much more. Then, Gamer Tunes, another show I do, is a bi-monthly gaming music podcast where you can find music to play in your games or when you're just chilling with your gaming buddies. All music on the show is either free, freely available via the Creative Commons, or artists have given me permission to play it. You can check Gamer Tunes twice a month. Finally, Monsters of the Shattered World is a monthly podcast hosted by Brent Newhall. Brent is one of the other editors at trollitc.com. Monsters of the Shattered World is a story-type podcast just like the old Sherlock Holmes radio. If you like any of these, or you just want to see what's going on, please head over to trollitc.com. Be sure to click on the Troll in the Corner Podcast Network logo.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly. New episodes every Thursday with Drew
and Jonathan talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly,
then
only at trollitc.com.
What is Wargaming Recon?
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
3,000 miles from home, an American army is fighting for you.
We today have concluded an agreement to end the war and bring peace with honor in Vietnam.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base.
Historical Wargaming for your ears, only at wargamingforums.com.
Oh, the humanity!
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner Podcast Network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.